You're listening to Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Hello and welcome to Truthful Out Radio. Today's date is Friday the 16th of June 2017 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks. I better apologise for last week. I had problems with my voice, so we were unable to bring you a podcast, but hopefully my voice is back together again now and I'm sounding okay and you can hear me all right. And we also have a new episode of Dennis's new documentary to discuss. Of course, I'm joined by Mr. Dennis Wise, producer of Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told. Dennis, how are you doing tonight?
Well, I've been better. We're banned off Twitter. All the websites have been taken down. Probably won't get to the bottom of it all till over the weekend, but certainly had an attack of our friends, no doubt.
Oh dear, no, that's not very good. I was just reading in the chat room there, one of our long-time chat members, Angel, he's just been kicked off of Facebook. I mean, I guess we expect to be kicked off of Facebook and Twitter, but you wouldn't expect your websites to be taken down. I hope you're able to do something about that. Maybe it's a DDoS attack. There are things that can be done about it. Maybe we can talk a little bit about that off air. But is your YouTube channel, is that still up and running?
Believe it or not, that's still standing.
Well, that's the important thing, isn't it? That's the important thing with the new episode of Freemasonic Victors of World War II. I was lucky enough to catch a viewing of that earlier. There's lots of subjects in that we can go into tonight. Do you want to give a brief rundown of what you were trying to show in that, and then maybe we'll go into some of it in more depth after that?
Well, what I'm trying to show in all the documentary really is the atmosphere surrounding mainland Europe at that time, where people were saying, you know, the Rothschilds funded him and all this kind of carry on, whereas you get a real sense now of what was facing Germany, the fear, what was coming, and even down to the point where even the Western governments knew about what was going on in the Ukraine to their eternal shame. So, you know, this is what I've been trying to do, and it seems to be coming off at the moment, you know, this atmosphere of mainland Europe and the threat.
Well, there's some pretty shocking stuff that you've got in there in this week's episode, and it starts off with Lenin and the way that they didn't tell the people that he'd actually died. And then you've got Stalin in there as well. And then the Holodomor comes up. And the fact that they were trying to portray Stalin as the good guy. And I noticed that one of the images that you had shows Stalin eye to eye with Roosevelt. And I thought that was just a very well done image, because they're both looking into each other's eyes. So showing they see eye to eye together, don't they?
I've often felt there was a connection before World War II, and certainly now we know for sure that all the governments, the Western governments, knew what was going on in the Ukraine. We now know that Roosevelt wanted or had been instructed by his bosses to get the Soviet Union into the League of Nations by resuming diplomatic means with them. So that now throws a complete new light on World War II, because we've always been of the the story's always been told that the Soviet Union was stabbed in the back by Germany when over Poland, and yet we've always wondered why Stalin was never declared war on when he invaded, and the fact that he turned up with the biggest army ever seen on the verge of breaking into Europe and no doubt heading for Berlin, only, you know, weeks after Churchill couldn't get Roosevelt to get the US into World War II. So I always felt that there was a connection there. People always ask, why did we side with the communists? And I think that episode pretty well explains everything.
So they were part of the League of Nations, and then there was this collectivization that was going on in the Ukraine that basically stole all the wheat and the seed and all the foodstuffs. Do you know much about this collectivization, what this actually was and what they were forcing on these Ukrainian peasants, Dennis?
Well, not to that extent, but what I do suspect that it is part of this white genocide. It was just another means. I mean, 10 million lost their lives in 1933, and all swept under the board. And when you add that to what was going to come with the two, well, with the following World War, and then after the World War, and then what we see today with the very similar way that they're changing the scene of Europe, just like they did with the Ukraine when it mentions that they brought in the Russians, the whole scene and the culture of the Ukraine were changed. And this is what they're doing exactly now with Europe, because obviously, I'm sure that when they closed the Soviet Union down, it wasn't long after till they opened up the European Union, which was just as communist as what the Soviet Union is, maybe a softer approach than what the Soviet Union had, but certainly same means to an end. So basically, I think you can just add this to another amount of white Christians, dead white Christians.
Well, it's interesting you bring up the moving in of all these Russians into Ukraine and just quite how that changed the face of the country. And if you think about it, the Russians were white and the Ukrainians were white. And yet the damage that was done by that and the hatreds and the resentment that we still see going on today, 70 years later, with the Ukrainians at loggerheads with Russia and, you know, even all out warfare. And yet this is two white nations that were put together within one country. So if two white nations can't get on that have an intertwined history that goes back 1,000 years, then what possible chances are there for any multicultural country to not end in war? That's the only logical outcome of mixing different races together. Even when you put the same race together, if it's two different nations, even that speak very close languages, then you're going to end up with war. I think that's one thing that we can learn from that and what happened in Ukraine. And I think the collectivization, I mean, this is just like these big gangs, isn't it, that take over and take protection money from all the businesses. Only rather than just taking protection money, they said, we're going to take everything. Absolutely everything. And this is what the Germans were saying, that the communists were just gangsters. They were international gangsters that had taken over a government. And you think about that. You think what it'd be like to have something like the mafia taking over a government? Well, that's what communism was. And that's why they took everything. They had no interest in seeing the country improve or seeing it as an investment. They just wanted to take everything they possibly could from that country in grain to pay back these bankers. And the more people that died from that, the better, because then they'd be easier to control afterwards.
Well, even more telling is the fact that they knew in Germany, well, the Weimar government knew, Hitler would have known. I've even got Johann von Herwarth admitting that the Weimar government knew and continued trading with the Soviet Union and all the Western countries did, because after World War One, they were all under Rothschild's banking system. And so they'd have all been, because all the governments would have been pro-Rothschilds, and they would have all been aware of what was going on. Consequently, America was the same. Roosevelt would have known. And so, consequently, it just changes a hell of a lot about World War II, in my opinion.
Well, all the intelligence agencies knew, didn't they? They were reporting back to Britain of what was going on there. And yet the only people that were speaking the truth about it were the Germans. They were cataloguing this and telling the story of what had happened and who these people at the front of communism really were. They were all Jews that had changed their names, and they were all involved in bank robberies, horrific violence. They would get all the women and bring them up to the house every night and rape different women every night. Really horrific behavior, and the streets would be flowing with blood, this communist terror that Germany didn't want in Germany.
Well, this is what happens when you live in a society without God, which is exactly what that society was. And what some people say today is that, oh, I don't need any laws, you know, maybe not, but other people do need some certain guidance, like the Ten Commandments. And without these guidance, you know, when people like Crowley, for instance, will say anything goes, this is a typical example of that society.
They're just slaves to their passions and their lusts, and when that's unbridled and it's not kept in check by anything whatsoever, they will just take it to extremes and try to outdo one another and be more and more violent and more twisted and more depraved, and think that this is freedom. This is freeing man to do whatever man wants to do. And it's just basically, it's not freeing man at all. It's man being a complete slave to his lower passions and behaving like an animal and not realizing that he actually is a man. And to be a man is to rise above all of that, is to rise above all the temptation and the passions. And if you fight, you fight for a just and noble cause, not just because the person you're fighting is weaker. And that was what communism was about. It was about just trying to weaken everybody and take over everything. I mean, Stalin wanted to be seen as this strong man, didn't he? And he didn't care how he won. I mean, you've got one bit in there showing you, I forget what order it was, one of these orders that have been revealed that Stalin gave out, and it was for them to dress up as the SS and dress up in German uniforms and then go out and torch villagers and massacre these villages. So it looked like the Germans had did it.
I've always wondered about that, people claiming that the Germans went in there and the Ukrainians accepting Ukrainians, but then on retreat they turned on the Ukrainians. I never thought that was a viable story, and certainly when I found out about the order, that didn't surprise me either. We've got footage of him in the Great Story Never Told, where the Russians are actually marching in the middle of Warsaw pretending to be Polish soldiers. It's something that they've done. They're not members of the Geneva Conventions, where, you know, to be caught in another uniform like that, you're shot as a spy. And so consequently, they did what they did, and it didn't surprise me. I've got to say, though, the opening, before I forget, the opening scenes of Lenin, by the way, you may have noticed I didn't give him much of a send-off. I came across some footage, and there was some really, really sad music, heartbreaking music, which I just couldn't believe. And I just refused to use it. And so I just did a couple of seconds on him, and he was there, and then he was gone. And that, to me, you know, it was probably not worth even that to me. But, you know, there he was included. Because Lenin, of course, was Stalin's mentor.
Well, I think Lenin actually had brain damage as well, didn't he? He had some serious brain damage, something seriously wrong with him. That they had suspicions about it, I think. And then they tested him after he died and discovered that he was like psychopathic schizophrenic. So you had madmen and gangsters that were leading this movement. And then you had these gullible leftists in Britain and elsewhere that thought this was a great thing. And they still think it today. Jeremy Corbyn singing his red flag anthem for Labour and the Labour Party. And this flag is red with blood. That's dripping with the blood of thousands, hundreds of thousands of white European people that were murdered by this ideology that people think it's cool to support today.
Yep. Yeah, it's, I mean, the propaganda has been, for socialism and against national socialism has been pretty ironed into people's heads now for a long time.
The shocking thing is that when you find out that the British people knew about it, or the intelligence agencies knew about it, Churchill knew about it. I mean, we talked about it before, haven't we? That order that said that they would make television programs to show that the Germans were really bad because they knew that the communists were going to carry out all these crimes, and they needed to cover it up. So we knew this was going on. I believe you discovered a Jewish journalist that was just telling flat out lies.
Durant.
Ukraine as well. Yeah, talk a little bit about him, I think.
Well, he worked for the New York Times, and everything that he reported, the other reporters in the Soviet Union, Malcolm Muggeridge was one of the British ones, couldn't believe exactly what he was sending back home to America. Total, complete lies. There was no mention of any such famine at all. And they just couldn't believe it. I mean, Malcolm Muggeridge got some information out, but he had to go through the diplomatic route. Otherwise, then he had to leave because he knew that if he was found out, which he would have been once it was released outside, you know, his life would have been in peril. But this Durante, for years, fed all this information to the New York Times, and I investigated the New York Times even, and apparently the publisher of the time was a Jew whose wife had escaped Germany because of her revolutionary contacts with committees, as it's worded, which means she was a communist, and she got out of the country quick. And even his, after him, it was handed down to his son-in-law, who was another Jew. And so the New York Times is the epitome of all the information. You know, it's fed through there first and then it's scattered to other parts of the country. And so it has to be the agenda, otherwise it doesn't happen. And of course, Durante was awarded for his reporting. But he's one of his best friends was Aleister Crowley. Again, it crops up again. Do as thou wilt. And these people that are great believers in it are certainly the people with the agenda like to use these people. Honestly, feel that the Bolsheviks were their avant-garde, if you like, of taking down Christians in Europe, which proved either by military means or by raping German women. So it's sad to see. But then again, another guy cropped up in the Spanish Revolution, and he was doing the same, apparently, feeding a message back to the New York Times that people were fighting for liberty and democracy and not reporting the communist atrocities, which I've always said, I've never seen enough of any communism being mentioned in any documentary about the Spanish Civil War.
You know, they don't like to talk about it. I mean, a lot of the time, you wonder what it is that these people have got in common with one another. I mean, you've got this Walter Durante, this journalist, and then you've got Aleister Crowley, and yet somehow there's a connection between them.
And Freemasonry with Crowley, maybe, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say. You've got these disparate personalities. It's not just them. You know, it's all over the elites and that class. And the connection is the Freemasonry, and it's the dedication to pushing towards this new world order, pushing towards Bolshevism and communism, and what we have today with what has become liberalism, which is really the opposite of what the whole idea of liberalism was about, really, when you think about it. It was about yeah. learning about things. It wasn't about censoring things and censoring people from having different viewpoints. It certainly wasn't against race, and yet it is today. It's all about the new world order and this new humanistic worldview where man is his own god, basically. Taking God out of the picture and saying that man can make his own rules and man can be his own God. And that's what these people were essentially pushing under different names. I mean, the French Revolution, Spanish Revolution, communism, Bolshevism, European Union. It's all the same ideology that's being pushed. And it's always nationalism is the only genuine fight back against it, because they push these ideals as being the opposite, as being the rebellion. I mean, this was put across as the revolution of the proletariat. This was supposed to be the workers rebelling. And yet they were just used as the shock troops, weren't they? Just to do all the fighting.
Yeah, I mean, I'm quite sure a lot of them people thought that they were overturning the bosses, but as it says a bit further on in the video, the guy's talking about how the Council on Foreign Relations, the communists there and the internationalists there, they don't actually have an argument as such, because both have the same, the same goal, which is obviously the Jewish domination of the world. So consequently, you have people in the US who aren't particularly fond of communism, which we found out in the last election, where, you know, you had people like Trump and his corner, and yet the Clinton corner was for taking down the Soviet Union, etc., which was more a communist ideology part of that that party. So consequently, and he goes on to explain that, you know, that communism is a you know, a real form of government where a small elite can control a lot of people, and that's exactly what they're doing with the EU. I mean, sad to hear this election now may put a jeopardy, but was I ever convinced we were going to come out of Brexit? I'm not so sure about that one. But consequently, you know, EU is communist. They got rid of the Soviet Union. They'd had enough of it. They left it, actually, to rot. And if it wasn't for somebody like Putin, who managed to take it over and over a number of years revive it to the point where now they can actually go into Syria and back off the New World Order, who were certainly out to take down Assad, has got to tell you something. And I was listening to a guy the other day, and he was on about the Ukraine, and now the Jews wanted the Ukraine to separate from Russia, and wanted a government in the Ukraine which was anti-Russian, and they got all this at one point. And then he explained why they'd given away the Crimea before that, and even parts of eastern Ukraine as well, actually give it away. And the reason was because of the fleet that Russia has in the sea down there, the Baltic Sea. Kind of, if that navy's moved away, which it would be if they lost the Crimea, Israel would be in a stronger position. But consequently, Putin went in there, did what Hitler did, more or less, and did a referendum. But 99.9% again. And then, so he managed to secure the Crimea, which, you know, the Jews weren't well pleased with. And then in eastern Ukraine, they were told to send in the soldiers to go in there and kick up people in there. And the Ukrainians refused. They said, we won't fight our own people. So consequently, nothing happened there neither. So there was a bit of a stalemate down there in the Ukraine. But then again, you know, Putin's stopping them in the Middle East as well at the moment. So he's a big enemy of them. I mean, a lot of people don't like Putin and don't trust him. But, you know, the actions that he's taking are certainly not, I don't believe anyway, in the favour of the New World Order.
Well, you bring up the election there. And we were talking about the people that fight on the side of the communists, and they're really not that intelligent. These Antifa groups aren't that intelligent. They attacked a conspiracy meeting of conspiracy theory group a while back, and they said, and I forget the guy that actually did it, Windows on the World, I think it was the program that he did, and it was Nick Colostrom that was speaking there, and they said that the actual intelligence of these people was really low. They were a really, really low intelligent people that didn't know really what they were doing there. They were obviously being directed from above by this I Hope Not Hate group, which had obviously encouraged these other groups to then mobilize and push people out there to attack this meeting and shut it down. But the people that are actually there trying to shut it down really didn't know what they were doing there. They really couldn't hold a debate. They didn't have much ideology. Yeah. And just unintelligent people. And these are the people that are used as the numbers, as the mob, to try and shut down any resistance to what's going on. And that's all the left has become, really.
Even half a brain, if you can say to half a brain, there's a group of Nazis meeting, that just fires up everything. You don't even have to say much more. And people just go down like lemons, won't they?
Yeah, they'll just attack it. And I really, with the European Union, anyone young that thinks about it, surely we're going to be better off preventing immigration, preventing homes being taken over, our housing being taken over, our jobs being taken over. And every single house that's being built now is being built for a foreigner. We don't produce enough children to replace ourselves, so we don't produce enough children to fill up the houses that we already have. So every new house that needs to be built for a foreigner. Every one of them needs a job, and every one of those jobs that they take is taking that job away from a young white man. And yet, you still, a large portion of the people that are supporting the Antifa, that are supporting the stay in the European Union movement, are young people. They're totally, utterly brainwashed by what they've been through at school, and don't seem to be able to think logically anymore.
That's obviously, like I said, when the vote went against staying in the EU. Obviously, that meant a lot of ties being cut. And obviously, I always felt that that Britain had a big part in the EU, bigger than what people suspected, because of, you know, the actual Rothschilds element to it all. And so consequently, now you've got an election now where you had a retainer wanting to lead the Brexit, which is never good, who then went to the electorate to increase her majority, so she felt that she had a bit more clout in negotiations, suddenly finds herself now with less clout than what she had. And the likelihood of being another election within a couple of years, no doubt. And Corbyn, who is already stated that this vote categorically means that people don't want to leave the EU. So I think it's going to be a problem now leaving. I really do.
Well, you bring up the influence that Britain has in the European Union. Obviously, with the Crown, with the City of London being the centre of banking, it has much more of an influence than we would like to think. And this is the reason why Britain always kept to the laws that were created by the European Union. These other countries don't. I mean, if you look at Eastern Europe at the moment, they're saying, no, we're not having any of your refugees, Merkel. Shove your refugees where the sun don't shine. And she's saying, oh, well, we're going to fine you. We don't care if you fine us. Britain would never do that. Britain would stick to all these laws because they know that these laws are coming from the City of London. They're coming from the banks. They're coming from Britain anyway. So it was a real shock to them to be told that the British population, more of the British population, 17 million of us, wanted to leave the EU. Now, I'm inclined to agree with you. Obviously, I think Theresa May, just incredible hubris and arrogance to call an election when she's only prime minister by default. It's pretty obvious that she is either going to get the same or lose support because she's done nothing to warrant being given any more support. That's just incredibly big-headed of her. But one thing that I didn't see coming about was this the Democratic Unionist Party, the DUP from Northern Ireland, who appeared to be really good. They're anti-abortion, they're anti-gay marriage, and apparently they've said that they will join with this coalition, but Britain has got to pull out of the free market and it's got to pull out of the EU. So it's basically what the left are calling a hard Brexit. A proper Brexit. And that's what DUP are going to support. So we may still see this happening, but she doesn't have that mandate that she did once have. But the DUP, I think, are going to be a good influence on things.
Well, that'd be interesting to see. That's news to me, that one. I didn't realise where the stand was. I mean, they've always been with the Tories whenever there's been a tight election. But that's good news, really is.
Well, it's only recently been confirmed. I mean, I've been following it since last week to see what they had to say on the matter, and that's now been confirmed. But then there might be issues with Northern Ireland because the British government is supposed to be the unbiased referee in between the DUP and the Sinn Féin. So if the British government are allied with DUP. We may see some issues there which hadn't been foreseen. But another positive thing from this is that this Scottish referendum, that's all gone done away with now. Nicola Sturgeon isn't going to be pushing for that anymore. Yep. She lost loads of seats. I believe that the website that was up has been taken down. So that's pretty positive. But Jeremy Corbyn Jeremy Corbyn seems to be behaving as if he's won the election. He thinks he's won the election, and to be honest, I think he did do well. He was obviously in his element, talking to the people. I wish he actually cared about the white British people, and not everyone.
He came over as with a belief in what he was saying. You could see that what he said, he truly believed, whether it was right or wrong. Whereas May was, you know, wishy washy and very sterile, no passion, and consequently some suicidal points in her manifesto, which kind of changed things around quickly.
Well, it is almost like she deliberately threw the election by going after the pensioners. The pensioners are the big support base of the Conservative Party. All the pensioners go out and vote, and most of the pensioners support the Conservative Party. So if she says she's going to start taking away winter fuel payments, start taking away people's houses from old people, that's deliberately harming her support base. I mean, there is a theory that this was deliberately done. She deliberately did this to lose her mandate so that she could then go for the soft Brexit.
Well, because it was suicidal then.
Yeah, that's what I mean. But this is why I have got some hope there with the DUP, that they have stepped in and said that they will support it, but it does have to be the equivalent of this hard Brexit. I mean, this hard Brexit, soft Brexit is absolute nonsense. I mean, the common market is the EU. That's what we were sold back in the 70s as the EU. We were told that's all it was going to be. It wasn't going to be a political union. It wasn't a loss of any sovereignty. It was just a common market that we were joining. So, so when people say we're leaving the EU, that means leaving the common market. That doesn't mean that's a hard Brexit. That's exactly what leaving the EU means, is leaving that common market, because that's where it all began. They use all these different treaties to try and push in this internationalism, don't they? It's like the climate change agreement. Oh, it's climate change. It's to help the world and the environment. No, it's not. It's an international agreement. It means everybody has to all obey under one government. There's never been one government that's been given sovereignty over the whole world. It's the devil that has sovereignty over the whole world, as far as
that's what they're aiming for.
Isn't it the devil, the king of the world, and he offers all the kingdoms to Jesus? So God's way is separate nations, separate sovereignty. Kings is what we originally had. We've done away with them, but separate sovereignty, separate nations, that's what's natural with a hierarchy, not equality. And everybody working for this shady elite that works for the bankers. And we've seen what happens when we have that with what was done to the Soviet Union. We can see what's happening to the European Union now, where it's been flooded with people and we've got all this austerity and nobody's got any money, nobody's got any jobs. And it's going the same way. You can't have these supranational agreements, supranational laws. I mean, we have our own culture, we have our own identity, we have our own way of doing things. And that's what this Second World War was really about, isn't it? It was sovereignty, separate nations against an alliance of other nations.
Yeah, it was kind of the last battle, if you like, because I don't see, unless, you know, Putin is what he's, I'm hoping he is, but other than that, you know, there is no real military threat. But what's frightening to me is that since World War II, and they haven't had that military threat, they've been able to do a real soft, a soft change on everything to, you know, bring up the EU communists, where people realizing it and certain things going on covertly that people wouldn't realize, like the United Nations replaced the League of Nations and is just another communist organization. So all these things have been going on sweetly, but I think because we know what they're capable of, as if that time does come where people suddenly do start to resist, then, you know, to see what happened in the Soviet Union, would not be surprised to see that in the in America. It wouldn't surprise me at all, because these are people with no soul, with no heart. I'm not even sure blood runs through the veins. But these people, like I said, they must have been holding back for all these years, doing it nice and softly. But the point will come where I do believe, you know, this hard communism will eventually come in.
Well, I think one of the ways they do this is to create this enemy, don't they? That's what they used the Soviet Union for when they formed NATO. And when they formed the United Nations, that was supposedly to stop there being any other wars. And yet the UN has been used to go in there and make war on countries wanted to assert their sovereignty. And the only union that really works is a union of Christendom. When we had Christendom, we had separate European nations that were all Christian. Some of them were part of the Holy Roman Empire. Some of them weren't, but they were all a part of Christendom, and they were all united in being against Mohammedanism. That's what we need today. That's the big threat that we're facing, is the Islamification of Europe. And if we could have a union of separate nations against that, that would be a good thing. But we don't see that. We see them calling for a union against terrorism. And we just know that every law that they make to deal with terrorism, they're going to use against nationalism, not against terrorism. When you speak out against Islamic terrorism, they try to shut you down, don't they, with these laws?
Exactly. Well, as you saw in that documentary part three, then what you watched today, nationalism in the Ukraine was a death penalty.
Well, yeah, that was it with communism. It wasn't just in the Ukraine. The other countries as well. I mean, it was sent off to the gulags if they caught you with a flag. I mean, if you had the Latvian flag, that was a 10-year prison sentence just for having your country's flag. Just for singing a patriotic song, you could get sent to the gulag. So anything to do with nationalism was the enemy. I think this goes back to a hatred that people that don't have an ethnic nation, people that don't have a race, that they have against those of us who do have a race and do have a nation.
Yeah, the Jews.
Because they can't have that.
About.
Yeah, Jews are obviously at the forefront of that. It all revolves around them. But it's this hatred of other people having something which they can never have.
Yeah. No, that's fair play, is that? I mean, what amazes me is people sometimes still say, well, what have the Jews ever done? You know, they've covered up so much. I mean, what have they not done? You know, incredible.
Well, they haven't been kicked out of 109 countries for no reason. And European people, we're very friendly people. I mean, just look at the way we've been welcoming in the third world and anyone who claims to be a refugee. And we're not anti-people coming into our countries. And yet we kicked the Jews out 109 times. And there's nobody more tolerant than Europeans. Nobody. Yeah. Nobody on earth.
Even more tolerant today, though. There must be putting something in water, I think.
Well, yeah, overly tolerant. We've been completely brainwashed by these Jews to welcome our own destruction. And this was all foretold.
What they've managed to turn around is the people like National Socialist Germany and their allies were their champions, and they managed to turn them round into figures of hatred. So these people of Europe are taught now that these were people of hatred. And so they have no leadership at all. I mean, fair enough, they lost the war anyway, but they got no one to turn to. They just, at the moment, they're just influxed by all this Marxism and political correctness. And as even Germans turn around, I've seen comments on YouTube where they actually believe that it's right there should be a law about the Holocaust. You know, it's like incredible brainwashing. So you've got a whole host of nations in the central Europe, oblivious to the real history, oblivious to the real religion, if you like, or religion of their descendants, living on a continent now which is slowly but surely turning into the Soviet Union. And it's, in one way, it's fascinating to watch because, you know, to put that down on paper and say we're going to do this, I would have thought would have been a challenge. But it doesn't seem to be the challenge that it actually could have been.
It's exactly what Hitler prophesied would happen if they lost the Second World War and communism won, which it did. And that's exactly what we're seeing. And we're told to, well, you mentioned the leadership there and the leaders that we have and the leaders in Germany. All our leaders are puppets. We haven't had any genuine political leaders since the Second World War. And people today are taught to mock that kind of thing. When we see over in Syria, we see people waving pictures of Bashar al-Assad. The modern with it metrosexual will mock that and will laugh at that and say, look how silly they are. They're either forced to do that or they're idiots. It's the same with Muammar Gaddafi. When you could see how much the people really loved what he'd done for them because he had done so much for them. And people today will mock that and how stupid they are for following a leader. And this is one of the chants that the left will make is follow a leader as if that's somehow wrong, as if we shouldn't have people of supreme excellence that we wish to lift up and to decide things and to direct things.
And guide us,
saying this is what we need, this is what we have naturally. And if you look throughout throughout the animal world, you have a school of fish, there's always one out the front leading. If you look at the birds, there's always one out the front leading. There's always the alpha male in the pack. Yeah. And this is what kingship was. There was this central figure that represented us and that had our best interests at heart. And the very best people would be around him. He would want the very best advisors. Whereas today, it's all the merchant class. It's all the bankers, all the people that have got to where they are through money, not through skill, not through intelligence, not through creating things, not through being privilege. The best at this, that, or the other, but just through money. And on top of that, now you've got this diversity agenda as well. So you've got the reverse positive discrimination, where they put people in the job just so that they fill a diversity quota. So you've got people there for money, and you've got people there just because of the color of their skin or what sex they are or what perversity that they have. So there's no excellence anymore. No excellence in anything. Excellence is looked down and frowned upon, isn't it? It's mocked.
Well, I watched a video of a guy who was talking about how he went to college in America. And he was saying that he'd come from a background where none of his family had ever actually been to college before, so it was somewhat really unique. And when he was there, he studied with a passion, and he got higher grades than a lot of other people. But then realized that there were people getting better jobs than him, opportunities, people who hadn't even really turned up at some classes. And then he found out later in life that this was being all part of this Masonic privileged, you know, they're looked after from an early age and get all the best jobs. And, you know, if we are on the outside, you know, you just left the scraps. And it was an interesting documentary, to be honest. But, you know, this all starts from, you know, from way back, which is why I've called it, you know, the secret victory of World War II by Masons.
Right, they're definitely the ones that won. I mean, that's the only time that anyone's ever really risen up against Freemasonry was in the Second World War. I guess maybe the Jews thought, well, they've pogromed us so many times now. What we really need is some goyim front men that we can put out the front so that they can blame them instead. That seems to be pretty much what they did, wasn't it? They took over Freemasonry and used them, put them out.
Yeah, well, I think if the point came where Hitler would have come to England, we would have had a run of Freemasons out of the country as fast as possible, because these people do cover for a lot. I mean, I'm just working on another episode. I've been working too hard this week, because I like to have a week off after I finish an episode. But I've just been working on the episode where I'm looking more into the biblical effect of it all. And it's plain to see that they have got two, the Freemasons and the occult societies have two aims, and that is one is obviously to bring us to a utopia, and the second one, from a biblical term, is the raising of the Antichrist. So that's going to be interesting. I'm still working on that part, but there is a religious side to it, which, you know, the Luciferian side, which needs covering.
Well, I think the utopian side as well, their idea of a utopia is with man free to indulge in all of his passions. But that's not really freedom, that's slavery, because you're a slave to your passions. You want to be able to conquer the passion and conquer the temptation, and then you're really free. I mean, to be really free, you obey your creator. There's no greater freedom than that, to be free to do what you were created to do. I mean, that's the general idea. But if you're just given in to perversity and greed and gluttony and materialism, all these things, it's like pouring oil on a fire. It doesn't sate the desire. And this is what we saw with these communists. I mean, they didn't just do a few horrific things and then stop. they did a few horrific things, and then they wanted to do more horrific things and more horrific things. Yeah,
they get, and it gets worse one because you're never satisfied. It's like a drug. You might take a certain amount to start with, but after a while, that doesn't really affect you anymore. So you've got to take more, and it's the same thing with this kind of violence.
So their idea of the utopia is not a utopia. I mean, it's a hell.
It's a utopia for the elite, isn't it, to be honest.
Yeah, a genuine utopia, you would have natural law. You would have justice. Yeah. You would have homogeneous ethnic societies. You would have a state that was run by the people that it was governing ethnically. So you would only have white British people ruling over white British people, and they would have to stick to natural law. So there'd be no usury. They would try to encourage the best to breed rather than the weakest and the not so good people to breed. And yet if you had somebody that was defective in some way or another, they would still be looked after, but that wouldn't mean that you would encourage them to breed. Got to be the worst possible thing when you see these programs that are encouraging people with Down syndrome to date one another. Encouraging them to breed. If you have something like that happen, which is terrible, you do all you can to avoid it. But if something like that does happen, you look after.
You don't want to encourage. You don't want to
encourage more of it. You want to encourage more of the very best people. And if you look at Tony Blair's way of doing things, to go back to these university, he wanted everybody to go to university. Everyone can go to university and get a degree. And that just means you do away with all excellence. If you're going to make university degrees so that everyone can get one, then that has no meaning whatsoever. And people that didn't go to university are probably likely to be far more intelligent because they could see that and didn't want anything to do with it. What would be the point in spending all that time learning what everybody else is? I want to do something different, something that I'm going to be the best at doing. Something that's going to be something that you're going to excel at, rather than just all being the same, all learning whatever it is you've been told to repeat and not learning to think for yourself. And that's what you have when you have a multicultural society. You have to do everything to the lowest IQ in that society. You have to tailor everything to that. It's the same with mixing boys and girls together. It means that the boys can't do any subjects that only boys can do. So the boys have to be held back. They can only do subjects that girls are good at, because otherwise it would exclude the girls. So
they take out the machoism as well. They've done that with football, to be honest. We're no longer, do you have the more physical type footballer now is a dinosaur of the game. Where you get a team like Spain winning the World Cup where you can't put a tackle in. And things have changed that way. And I noticed the England, I think it was the under 21 side, but won a tournament the other week. It showed a photograph of them, and out of all the players, I saw one white player.
And that doesn't surprise me. Surprise me. But they've done away with all the playing fields as well. They've sold all of those off. But if you've got a multiracial society, you've got different subspecies competing against one another. You're not going to have a white guy that's going to be able to run as fast as the blacks. You're not going to have a Negro that's going to be able to swim as fast as the whites. It's an uneven competition in their impetuousness to equalize everything and put everyone in the races together. They've actually ended up making things unequal. Far more unequal than they would have been. And if you had sports by race, you'd have whites racing against whites, and then that would be equal. But it's not equal at the moment. As soon as you add diversity in, you add in all these inequalities, and yet the people that are promoting it, that's all they talk about is equality. But all they've done is create lots of inequality and make things unjust for whites. We don't have a fair competition anymore.
And that can only be achieved, of course, with people like Durant and half of Hollywood, others I could mention, actually siding with them, knowing exactly what the agenda is, and hoping that one day when it all comes to pass, that they will be treated as, true allies and lords, whereas we all know in the Talmud, all good goyim must die. So, you know, these people are delusional themselves, although Durant, like we say, was a Jew.
Well, they have these people in the media that cover everything up for them, don't they? As I say, they mock and ridicule anyone that speaks the truth and cover up all the negative aspects of diversity. But they won't be rewarded for that. They don't get rewarded for that. They'll throw them under the bus as quickly as possible.
They've done it before. What I did find out in the research in that last part as well was programs like CNN and the news programs in America, the presenters are not just presenters. Them presenters are part of the Council on Foreign Relations and actually put in their bit, into the agenda. They're not just news readers, which I found amazing.
Well, I think a lot of the journalists are actually intelligence operatives. I think there was a big exposure of this done in the 70s. How many people there were working for the CIA or the FBI that were actually posing as journalists? So, and we see this today when we see these journalists that are embedded with the terrorists over in Syria, and the BBC are filming it with these journalists that they've got embedded with them, and they're a part of it. They're the British liaison officer with them, whose cover is as a journalist. This is why these journalists do get arrested and accused of being spies, because at least half of them probably are. And it's the same with these presenters. I mean, they know that the television is what helps to mold people's opinions, so they're going to want their intelligence operatives right in there, right up front, lying to the people.
Yeah. I mean, there's me, Mr. Naive, watching Dan Rather, thinking he was just a fairly good reporter.
I'm not sure what happened there. I don't think I've heard of him, Dan Rather.
He was one of the leading reporters in America. You know, for the I think it was CNN. To be honest, I think they turned on him in the end, believe it or not. But he was a member of the Council of Foreign Relations, and he used to front the CNN, you know, with the headline news.
Yeah, I expect there's a lot of them that are involved with that. Same as when you get the politicians and they leave their jobs, they go working for bankers or working as directors of companies that they've changed laws to benefit. This is what happens when you don't have a noble class. A group of people that are taught from an early age about how to rule people, how to govern people, that they wouldn't have anything if it wasn't for these people that they're governing. If you don't have that class, then you just have a group of greedy people, and the ones that make the most from stabbing the most people in the back, they're the ones that rise to the top. And if you don't have a line that's supposed to be passing things on down to the next generation, then people are going to sell things off. If you've got a different prime minister that's in every 5 years, then that prime minister is going to want to sell things off and make a profit for himself once he leaves. It's not in his best interest to pass things on, is it?
He's going to want to own it. I mean, every people were fooled by that woman Thatcher when she used to go out into Europe and come back and say, "I've been battling for better rights for Britain." It's all a lot of theatre, just like the Cold War, where just a lot of theatre.
They end up selling things away. This is why our children's futures have been mortgaged. This is why we'll be paying back all these debts for another 100 years for the bankers, because the people that made those arrangements to do that, they're no longer in power now. They're out of power, and they're working for these bankers. They've been paid, and a lot of them aren't white. They haven't got any racial identity whatsoever, so they couldn't care less about these next generations that are going to have to put up with all the diversity and all the debt. They couldn't care less. You know, do you think Sadiq Khan, mayor of London, he cares how white people are not going to be able to afford any houses in London in the next 10 years?
Not at all.
None of them. None of them care.
I'll tell you what was interesting, though, Sven, sorry to interrupt, was the recent fire the tower which was on fire in London. Just again, how many white people was in there? I think I only saw one.
Hardly any.
Hardly any. Yeah.
I've been keeping up with that. They've been rioting today. Negroes and Muslims rioting, demanding to be rehoused instantly. They want to be rehoused immediately, and they want to be rehoused in the exact area where the tower burnt down. They want money. They want this, that, and the other, demanding all of this. And none of them, ancestors built the country, and yet they just feel entitled to everything that's been put there by us. It's quite sickening to watch them demanding all these things, to be looked after. Yeah, they were at the offices today, screaming and shouting that the BBC wasn't filming them when the BBC actually was filming them. I mean, when you look at it, you think that's London, is it? I didn't see any white faces there today.
No, I mean, same went on with the Terror Bridge. Same again there. Even the people who were brought out as heroes, they were all foreign.
Now, they feel entitled that we should be putting a roof over their heads, we should be clothing them, we should be maintaining that property for them. I mean, they're saying, well, how could this happen? How could this happen? How could anyone let this happen in this day and age? And yet, if you look at the countries that they come from, they don't even have an infrastructure there to put up council houses or house people. Their houses, you look at Africa, for instance. They got houses that look like beavers' dams. Beavers can build houses better than Negroes.
No fire alarms in there.
Yeah, and there they are complaining, saying that they want to sue the government for this happening, how the housing associations haven't spent enough money on them. Well, they're not really a very good investment, is it? Loads of Negroes and Muslims in a tower, 90% of them not working. And what's that bringing in for the country? It's just a drain on the country. And yet they seem to have this chip on their shoulder, this sense of entitlement, that we should be doing everything for them. And
I think that all stems from films like Zulu.
Yeah.
I think they think we owe something after Zulu.
You know, they'll say, we have hundreds of years of or centuries of tradition of law. No, you don't. The British people have centuries of traditions of law. You came here in the last two generations. You never added to the system of law that we have. You never even had a system of law in your country. But there you are telling us what the law is and what we should be paying you and what you're entitled to, saying our laws, we have this, our democracy. Every time I hear a Negro say our democracy, it infuriates me. That Gina Miller, that Negro female that stuck a spanner in the spokes of Brexit with getting the judges to say that they had to have a government vote. And she kept saying, our democracy, our democratic traditions. She doesn't have any democratic traditions. She's a Kenyan. She's never democratic traditions. They don't even have a written language.
Well, she's British in her eyes.
Well, this is what I mean by we're so tolerant, Dennis. We've allowed these people to share in our achievements. Yeah. To share in our culture and our greatness, and that's the way they repay us. They just feel entitled to it and to demand more and more and more from us. Yeah, it's really interesting to see what's happening.
Like I said, it was interesting because everyone they interviewed was, there was one white, a photograph of a white man who was 80 odd who they couldn't find, but all the rest couldn't see a single white man.
I did see one report, and it was saying that a white Briton and it was his fridge that had blown up, and it had blown the whole building up. And then when they discovered it was a Negro or an Ethiopian, they were saying that this courageous Ethiopian had warned his neighbours that his fridge had just blown up, and he tried to save them by warning them that his house was on fire. Total change in the narrative. I don't know whether that someone had faked that up or not, but it's believable, isn't it? It's believable.
Well,
I saw it.
I can believe it. Yeah. Well, it's all part of the propaganda, isn't it?
It is.
Even May went down there and she got some stick, didn't she, for not meeting the residents? So she had to call in the hospital today. So she's having a nightmare at this moment in time.
Yeah, she's all going off for Mrs. May, isn't it? Well, Dennis. We're coming to the end of the podcast. You've still got some.
It's not going to take me long now, is it? No. So we can get everything.
You've got one channel still going, haven't you? Where can people go to find your work?
Well, YouTube is the place where, obviously, I've still got the great story up there, but we've got to be wary what we put up there because it's on borrowed time. But certainly my site is still up there, and hopefully the websites will be up and running at some point. Just find out exactly what the problem
is. Is your YouTube under Dennis Wise, or is it Truthful Out?
Dennis Wise, yeah.
Okay, check out Dennis's channel for more from his new documentary series. And you can also check out Radio Aryan YouTube as well. That's linked to it, the Radio Aryan site. We've got
another one, yeah.
Yeah, we've got all our podcasts on there. So thank you for coming on, Dennis. Thank you very much, listeners,
no problem,
for listening. We hope everyone thank you. We hope everyone has a great weekend, and we'll be back next week, same time, same place, on Radio Aryan, Friday night, for more Truthful Out Radio.
Radio Aryan.